Picture this. It's 2006, and you're sitting inside a classroom at New York University's Kern Institute.
Okay, setting the scene. I like it.
Right. So a man is standing at the front of the room, right at the chalkboard, chalk in hand, but he hasn't written a complex mathematical formula. Instead, he's drawn this really simple curve.
Like a landscape, right.
Exactly. It looks like a landscape of valleys and hills, basically the silhouette of a mountain range. And he taps the bottom of the lowest valley with his chalk, and he tells his students that a machine finding an answer is, well, it's like a ball rolling down this terrain to rest at the lowest point.
Which is such a brilliant way to visualize it.
It really is. And that chalk drawing is the focal point of today's deep dive into the book, Jan LeCun, The Father of Artificial Intelligence. Specifically, we are diving into Chapter 7, which is called The End of the Era of Handcrafted Features.
Yeah, and we really need to contextualize just how radical that drawing was in the mid-2000s. I mean, drawing a picture of hills and valleys instead of, a hard math that was practically an act of rebellion.
An act of rebellion, just for drawing a hill.
Absolutely. Because the mainstream artificial intelligence world at that time was completely obsessed with strict probabilities and human-engineered rules. So today, we are tracking Jan LeCun's lone crusade to kind of dismantle that whole era of computer science.
And his goal was to let machines learn organically, right? Like the way a cat or a human baby learns.
Right, which ultimately laid the foundational architecture for the AI that we all interact with today.
So to really understand that rebellion, we should look at why those NYU students in 2006 were so puzzled by a simple drawing of a mountain range. From what the sources detail, they were taught machine learning strictly through the lens of probability.
Right. Probability was king.
Yeah, the accepted language of the era was all about Bayes' theorem and graphical models. So discussing valleys and energy states, it sounded like a lecture in physics, not computer science.
Well, the broader academic community basically demanded that approach. If you were submitting a paper to a major conference back then, grounding your system in probability was the price of admission. It gave your work this veneer of rigor and elegance.
But there's a catch.
A huge one. Adhering strictly to probability introduces a severe mathematical toll, because for any calculation to be a true probability, all possible outcomes have to add up to exactly one, or, 100%.
Which, on paper, ensuring all probabilities sum to 100% seems perfectly rational.
It seems rational until you encounter the actual mechanics of calculating it in a complex system. To guarantee that your fractions add up to exactly one, you have to first define the entirety of the whole.
The denominator.
Exactly. You have to calculate what statisticians call the partition function. Think of it as this massive scale where you are forced to weigh every single possible answer in the universe just to figure out what exact percentage your specific answer represents.
So if we're dealing with a heavily constrained problem, like looking at a single handwritten digit and asking the system, hey, is this a number from 0 to 9? Finding the whole is pretty trivial. You only have to weigh 10 possible answers.
Right. 10 answers is easy, but the architecture completely breaks down when you move from simple digits to complex data, like high-resolution images or video.
Because the possibilities just explode.
Exactly. The moment you introduce a standard photograph, the number of possible pixel combinations skyrockets. I mean, a single image measuring just a few hundred pixels across contains more potential visual combinations than there are atoms in the observable universe.
Wow. Wait, really? More than atoms in the universe.
It's mathematically staggering, and strict probability demands that the machine place every single one of those microscopic atomic-level possibilities onto the scale to find the total sum.
Which is impossible.
Completely. In a high-dimensional space like computer vision, finding that partition function wasn't just computationally slow, it was mathematically impossible. The universe would literally freeze over before the calculation finished.
It's sort of like trying to predict a sports championship by mathematically calculating the exact decimal point winning percentage of every single team on Earth against every other team before you even look at the finals. It's just exhausting.
That's a great analogy.
So what LeCun proposed with his energy-based model, or EBM, bypassed that requirement completely. He was basically saying, hey, between Team A and Team B, you just need to observe that Team A's stats look stronger. You don't need to do the math for the whole world to know who wins a specific matchup.
Right, bypassing that mathematical toll booth is the core philosophy of the energy-based model. Instead of demanding a strict percentage that adds up to one, EBMs just measure compatibility between an input and an output.
Using that energy score.
Exactly. A single score called energy. A highly compatible match gets a low energy score, which corresponds to the deep valleys in that chalkboard drawing. A poor match gets a high energy score, represented by the hills.
So it's not doing universal math, it's just exploring.
Right. When the machine is trying to predict what belongs in, say, the missing corner of a photograph, it isn't executing one impossible calculation. It treats reasoning as a physical search. It wanders the terrain, ponders different possibilities, and eventually settles into the deepest valley.
And that physical search really mirrors biological deliberation. Humans rarely use an instant binary reflex for complex abstract problems. We weigh options, right?
Mm-hmm.
We think about how different pieces fit together. LeCun was giving the machine the architectural space to actually ponder.
He fundamentally believed that true reasoning requires that unstructured space. But, and this is a big, but introducing an energy-based model opened up a different massive vulnerability.
The representation collapse.
Exactly. It's a problem LeCun fought to solve for two decades. If the system's only objective is to lower the energy for correct answers, eventually the entire landscape just sinks. The hills erode, the dynamic terrain flattens into a completely featureless plane.
So the system basically discovers a loophole. It realizes, oh, if I just make everywhere a valley, I don't have to distinguish between complex inputs. It just spits out the exact same answer for every single image it sees.
Yes. It's exactly like a student writing C for every question on a multiple choice test. The error rate might look artificially low, but the machine hasn't actually learned to recognize anything.
It's just being lazy. So how do they fix that?
Well, preventing this lazy mimicry became the central burden of designing an energy landscape. To combat representation collapse, LeCun and his team built two distinct toolkits. The first was the contrastive method, formalized around 2006 by researchers Rhea Hadsell and Sumit Chopra.
Okay, and how did that work?
Their approach was to actively dig valleys for the correct answers while simultaneously piling up mathematical dirt to build steep hills for the wrong answers.
And they did this using Siamese networks, right? You take two identical artificial brains attached at the hip, sharing the same underlying parameters.
Yeah, they're identical twins.
Right, so you show one brain a picture of a dog and the other brain a slightly rotated picture of that same dog. The network pulls their energy states closer together. But if you show them two completely different animals, the network actively forces an energy hill between them.
Exactly. And that mechanism was highly effective for smaller tasks, like facial recognition or basic handwriting. The system learned to map similar objects into the same valleys. But scaling this method revealed a critical flaw.
Because of the dataset sizes.
Right. As image datasets grew exponentially larger, the number of wrong pairs you had to actively push apart just exploded. Actively building a hill for every single incorrect combination in a high-dimensional space is computationally unfeasible.
I mean, if building hills for every wrong answer takes too much work, how did LeCun stop the machine from collapsing?
That brings us to the second toolkit, the regularization method. This is where LeCun placed his long-term bets. Researchers Corey Cavacquaglu and Marc Aurelio Ronzato developed a way to restrict the machine's capacity.
Restrict its capacity, like making it less powerful.
Basically, yes. Instead of manually managing the landscape of fake answers, they place strict constraints on the machine's internal resources. They force the network to reconstruct an image using only a highly limited, sparse number of internal components.
Oh, I like to think of this like packing for a trip. If you give the machine an enormous, unlimited suitcase, it just throws every single pixel inside. It memorizes the entire image without thinking about what actually matters.
Right, didn't prioritize.
But if you restrict it to a tiny backpack, which is what regularization does, you force it to be frugal. The machine has to discard the noise and figure out what the most essential repeating patterns actually are. It is forced to find the fundamental building blocks of the image.
And that frugality drives understanding. By shrinking the capacity of the model, the machine naturally started recognizing the recurring fragments of the physical world on its own. And it did this without any human supervision directing its attention.
Okay, so if LeCun and his team at NYU had this functioning energy model and a solution for representation collapse, it raises a huge historical question.
Yeah.
Why wasn't the rest of the world adopting this architecture?
Mm.
I mean, the sources indicate he was largely ignored by the broader community during this period.
He was completely ignored. And the reason is that the mainstream AI community was heavily invested in a totally different paradigm. LeCun often referred to it as a feature engineering factory.
The Pascal competitions, right?
Yeah. The battleground for computer vision in the mid-2000s was the Pascal image recognition contest. If you analyze the systems winning those competitions, they all shared a rigid architecture. The front end of the system, the part responsible for actually observing the raw pixels, was entirely designed by human mathematicians.
They relied on these hand-grafted visual extractors, like SIFT and HOG.
Exactly. SIFT, which was invented by David Lowe in 1999, was this meticulously designed algorithm that scanned an image specifically to locate sharp corners and edges. And HOG, introduced by Dallal and Triggs in 2005, measured the direction of brightness gradients. It was looking for sharp shifts from light to dark.
So researchers were essentially chopping images up into a bag of visual words based solely on these human-defined rules. They would count how many corners or gradients were in the bag and feed that structured numerical data into a basic shallow classifier.
Like a support vector machine.
Right. And then that SVM would decide if the picture was a cat or a bicycle. So the machine wasn't really looking at the photograph. It was looking at a spreadsheet of corners.
The heavy lifting of deciding what visual information was important was done by humans standing at a chalkboard. The machine was simply sitting at a fully prepared table, consuming the highly processed data humans had curated for it.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate for a second. Taking the perspective of the mainstream researchers, if brilliant scientists already understand that edges, corners, and lighting gradients are the most critical components for identifying a bicycle, why not just program that directly into the system?
That's a fair question.
I mean, handcrafting those features theoretically saves the machine a tremendous amount of computational effort. It doesn't have to reinvent the concept of an edge.
And that perspective was the accepted consensus at the time. Handcrafting features was viewed as a necessary transfer of human expertise. But LeCun argued that this approach created an invisible ceiling.
How so?
When you handcraft the features, you are permanently restricting the system's perception. You are basically giving the machine a pair of glasses with a prescription written by a human, rather than allowing the machine to evolve its own visual cortex.
Oh, wow. So if a human designer failed to realize that a specific, subtle texture was crucial for identifying an object, the machine would be permanently blind to it.
Exactly. It remains trapped within the limits of human imagination. And there was a strong historical precedent backing LeCun up on this. The field of speech recognition had already fought and resolved this exact conflict.
Oh, right. With linguists trying to hard code pronunciation rules.
Yes. For years, they tried to program grammar syntax into machines with terrible results. Then a researcher named Fred Jelinek championed a statistical approach, allowing the machine to deduce the patterns from massive amounts of raw audio data instead.
Didn't Jelinek have a famous joke about that?
Yeah, he famously joked that every time he fired a linguist, the performance of his speech recognizer went up.
That's amazing.
It's harsh, but true. Hand-coded rules inevitably shatter when they collide with the messy, unpredictable reality of raw data. But despite the lessons from speech recognition, the computer vision community remained resistant.
They didn't want to let go of their tools.
No, because the prevailing mathematical theory of the era warned that feeding raw, unprocessed pixels directly into a multi-layer neural network was a computational dead end. The theory posited that the system would inevitably get trapped in shallow mathematical puddles known as local minima and just cease learning entirely. The formal math suggested it was a dangerous, unproductive path.
But LeCun had already demonstrated that the math was overly pessimistic. Back in his Bell Labs days, he built convolutional neural networks, or CNNs, that successfully read the raw pixels of handwritten postal digits, learning the visual features completely from scratch.
True, but the academic establishment marginalized that early achievement. They labeled it a toy problem. The consensus was that, sure, CNNs could handle clean, uniform numbers on a flat, white envelope, but they assumed CNNs would critically fail when exposed to the chaotic, cluttered reality of three-dimensional photographs.
So in 2004, LeCun, alongside researchers Liang Batu and Fuji Huang, constructed a dataset specifically to break that assumption. They introduced the NORB dataset.
And NORB was genius.
They gathered physical 3D toys, animals, human figures, airplanes, trucks, and cars, and photographed them under incredibly difficult lighting conditions and bizarre angles. Like seeing an airplane directly from below in a harsh shadow.
It was a chaotic, high-dimensional data set designed specifically to expose the fragility of those handcrafted systems. So LeCun deployed his convolutional neural networks, completely devoid of any human-engineered filters, and the system successfully learned to identify the 3D objects straight from the raw pixels.
He proved the machine could organically learn complex physical shapes without human intervention. You would assume that solving a problem the community deemed unsolvable would be met with enthusiasm, right?
You would think. But it was met with rejection. When LeCun submitted his papers detailing the NORB results, reviewers frequently sent back notes basically asking why he didn't compare his results to systems using SIFT.
They were completely missing the point.
Yeah.
They essentially demanded to know why he wasn't using the standard human parts that the rest of the industry relied upon.
Exactly. Because he steadfastly refused to integrate the handcrafted components that define the era, his work was penalized. The mainstream viewed his methodology as stubborn and eccentric. But for LeCun, avoiding those tools was a fundamental conviction about the nature of intelligence itself. He wasn't just trying to optimize an image classifier.
Right, he was aiming at a much larger target. LeCun didn't just want machines to learn their own features to recognize a static photograph. He wanted them to learn the underlying common sense of the physical world, completely free from human supervision.
And to grasp the magnitude of that goal, we have to look at Hans Moravec's paradox, which was formulated in 1988. Moravec observed a deep counterintuition in artificial intelligence.
Okay, what was the paradox?
Well, humans assume that high-level abstract reasoning is difficult and basic physical tasks are simple. But for machines, computing millions of digits of pi or defeating a grandmaster at chess is computationally straightforward.
Right. Yet trying to program a robotic arm to perform a task as mundane as a one-year-old baby picking up a plastic cup without crushing it, or replicating a cat effortlessly leaping over a chain-link fence, is devastatingly difficult.
Exactly. The absolute hardest step on the ladder of intelligence is the very bottom rung. It is the basic physical intuition of how the universe operates.
And LeCun recognized that this physical intuition cannot be explicitly programmed. He studied developmental psychology, drawing heavily on the work of researchers like Emmanuel Dupuis and Elizabeth Spelk, who analyze infant cognition. I mean, think about the developmental process of a newborn. No human sits a baby down and lectures them on Newtonian physics.
Right. They don't read a textbook on gravity. They acquire an understanding of the world entirely through observation.
Yes. The sources cite this fascinating experiment demonstrating this. Researchers show a baby a toy car rolling along a flat surface. If the baby is only a few months old and the car suddenly drives off the edge of the table and floats in midair, the baby just watches passively.
Because their brain hasn't constructed the internal model of gravity yet.
Exactly. But if you perform that exact same floating cart trick for a 9-month-old baby, they stare at it in absolute shock. Their eyes widen. Their internal prediction of how reality operates has been profoundly violated. They learn the rules of gravity simply by passively watching objects fall over 9 months.
And the scale of the data involved in that passive observation is staggering. Consider the human optic nerve. It contains roughly 2 million nerve fibers, transmitting megabytes of complex visual data to the brain every single second.
Every second.
Yes. By the time a child reaches 4 years of age, they have processed approximately 16,000 hours of awake, continuous visual information.
That mountain of raw, unbroken sensory data completely dwarfs the total volume of information a human could ever acquire from reading text over a lifetime. I mean, it highlights why LeCun argues that attempting to build genuine intelligence solely on text data is structurally flawed. The vast majority of our understanding of the universe is cemented long before we learn to read a single word.
Which leads to the ultimate question of his architecture. How do you engineer a machine to learn like a 9-month-old baby? The answer is self-supervised learning. You use time as the teacher.
Time is the teacher. I like that.
Instead of paying humans to manually label billions of static images, you feed the machine raw video, pause the sequence, and demand that it predict the next frame. Will the falling glass shatter or bounce? Will the car turn left or continue straight?
Ah, so the arrival of the next frame serves as an irrefutable, label-free answer key. The machine makes a prediction, the video plays forward, and the machine immediately calculates the energy difference between its internal model and physical reality.
Exactly. LeCun refers to this background accumulation of knowledge as the dark matter of intelligence. In astrophysics, dark matter constitutes the invisible, overwhelming bulk of the universe. In cognition, the silent, continuous observation of physical reality constitutes the invisible bulk of human learning.
And to visualize how this all fits into the broader field of AI, LeCun introduced his famous cake analogy at the NeurPS conference in 2016. He asked the audience to picture a massive, dense chocolate cake.
Right. The cake. So the massive sponge, the foundational body of the cake, represents self-supervised learning. This is the machine acquiring common sense by observing, predicting, and correcting its internal models without any human intervention.
And then the thin layer of icing on top of the cake represents supervised learning. This is the highly specific human-labeled data, the methodology dominating those Pascal competitions we talked about.
Yes, and finally, the single cherry resting on the icing represents reinforcement learning, which is learning through trial and error based on explicit rewards, like the systems used to master digital board games.
But relying solely on the cherry is inherently dangerous in the physical world. I mean, if we attempted to teach a machine how to drive a car utilizing only reinforcement learning, the system would have to drive the vehicle off a cliff 10,000 times before it accumulated enough negative rewards to deduce that falling off cliffs is bad.
Right, which obviously isn't how humans learn to drive.
Exactly. Humans bypass that trial and error because our common sense derived from years of self-supervised observation, already informs us that gravity is unforgiving and metal is heavy. We run the simulation to the cliff in our minds because we possess a robust internal model of reality.
Synthesizing all of these threads really reveals the core narrative of Chapter 7. Energy-based models, the stubborn rejection of handcrafted features like SIFT and HOG, and the aggressive pursuit of self-supervised learning are not disparate technical hobbies.
They're all connected.
Yes. They are three manifestations of a single unifying conviction. True intelligence cannot be programmed from the top down using human rules. It must emerge organically from the bottom up by forcing a system to experience the messy, high-dimensional reality of the world.
And for over a decade, LeCun stood at his chalkboard drawing energy landscapes, pointing his students in a direction completely antithetical to the academic consensus. He possessed the theoretical architecture, but he had to wait patiently for digital datasets to grow exponentially larger and for hardware computing power to accelerate enough to prove his theories viable.
And that validation arrived abruptly. In 2012, the hardware and the data finally caught up to his vision, and the era of handcrafted features shattered almost overnight. The entire industry pivoted toward the architecture he had been defending all those years.
Which is incredible. As we conclude this deep dive, there is a lingering thought regarding the current trajectory of the field. LeCun demonstrated that biological intelligence, the foundation of common sense, is forged in the massive, unstructured river of physical sensation experiencing gravity, momentum, and light.
A very physical process.
Right. But as the industry races to construct modern AI, confining these systems entirely inside sterile server racks and feeding them primarily the thin, text-based data scraped from human screens, we have to ask, can a machine ever truly achieve common sense if it doesn't possess a physical body to actually feel the world?
It remains the defining question of artificial intelligence. Until a system can physically roll down that valley itself, it may merely be reading the maps we draw for it.
Keep that valley in mind. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.